Possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very large household. So that this man was accounted as the greatest man in all the East. And his sons would go and feast in their houses, each on an appointed day, and would send and invite their three sisters and eat and drink with them. And so it was, Job chapter 1 and verse 5, that when the days of feasting had run their course, that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job had said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did regularly. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and walking back and forth on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on all the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not placed a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? And you have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." But the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person." And Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Verse 13, Job chapter 1. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels and took them away, and yes, killed all the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you." And Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord has given, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all of this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. That was a really, really bad day. Now, it would be difficult. One would be hard-pressed for us to look into our own lives and find a worse day than the one that we read about Job having in Job chapter 1. But for the sake of the exercise, and so that it becomes personal to us, I would like for you to ask yourself, if you could look back into your life from your birth until this day, and you could think about a particularly bad day. In fact, I'll give you an opportunity to broaden that out to maybe three or four different occasions in which you had a day that was just so difficult, so hard that it was, well, it just took your breath away. It was as if walls were surrounding you and you could not escape. Perhaps you would think of it as the worst day of your life to this point. I think about the possibility of bad days and what a bad day would look like. We would account for death, the death of a loved one. And if you have lost several loved ones, you have dealt with this many times. And it's different for each person that you might lose based on the relationship that you might have shared with that person. And what is death, really? It is obviously the separation of body and spirit, where the body returns to the dirt, to the earth, to the dirt as it was, and the spirit back to God. And we understand that death is a part of life. But the reason why death is difficult for us is because it's a separation issue. We lose a part of ourself when we lose a person that we love. And that relationship can never be what it once was. And who you knew, even looking at yourself, is a person that you can never fully regain. And death is difficult. We can think about tragedy. Bad day. A fire. A flood. A crime, perhaps, that was committed against you. Maybe an accident that led to damage or destruction of property or your health. I have, because of my occupation, had moments where I was much like one of Job's friends that came to him and dealt with him when he was in his trouble. People expect for the preacher to come on the good days and the bad days, and especially in some instances on the bad days. I have sat in a person's front lawn with my wife on a quilt while we watched our friend's house burn to the ground. I have counseled people who lost their homes to a flood and even their children in that same flood. I've thought about different moments, car accidents that killed people or put them in the hospital. We could think about all types of different things that can happen to people tragically, and those are bad days. Divorce can be a bad day because it's a broken family. Maybe you dealt with this as a child, your parents split up. Maybe it happened in your own marriage, but either way, it was a huge disappointment. It had far-reaching effects. You didn't sign up for that. And you know that people tend to treat you differently afterward. Relationships are hard to be the same as they were. You know what may be sadder than a divorce that ends in conflict? A divorce in which it goes off without a hitch. Because the people are both so relieved to move on without each other. I remember one time a lady that I knew back in Lawrenceburg, an older lady in her 60s, had been divorced for many, many years, but was looking back on it, and she had a son that was a friend of mine who became a Christian. We became friends first, and then he and his wife obeyed the gospel. She had a lot of regret looking back, and she said, "You know, Jeremiah, the saddest thing about my divorce is we walked into that courtroom or before that judge, and we both signed the papers, and we didn't say a word, and we walked out." Isn't that sad? That we were just so finished with that. That's a bad day. Loss of a job. Have you ever lost your job? You ever been fired? You have a feeling of rejection. You feel worthless. You feel helpless. Maybe even incompetent. Maybe you feel betrayed or backstabbed because someone was willing to take the food out of your children's mouth just to keep you from showing up another day for work that you were sacrificing so much to achieve. Maybe a diagnosis. A cancerous diagnosis. Or perhaps some disabling disease, something that's going to alter your life, to compromise the level of health that you're going to have for the rest of your life. And maybe it will take your life, and you don't know how long it's going to take. But I want to say that the worst day of all, at least for me, when I think about the things that I could experience in life, is the day in which I am confronted with the consequences of my own sins. You see, you've done things that have hurt people. You've sinned in such a way to hurt your reputation or the way people think about you. You've acted in such a way that your selfishness and your foolishness and your willful behavior had led to a break in your relationship with God and also a break in the love and relationship that you have shared with others. You know, I imagine that's how Adam and Eve felt the day that God kicked them out of the garden. How Cain felt when confronted by God. How Esau felt when he didn't get his birthright. How Moses felt when he didn't enter the promised land. How David felt when his child of adultery died. How Peter felt when the rooster crowed and he made eye contact with Jesus. How Judas felt when he took those 30 pieces of silver and threw them at the steps of the temple. The emotional, mental, and spiritual sorrow that our sin causes is greater than any physical sorrow we can ever know. We feel as if we're a failure before God. And the worst realization that any person can ever have is that we failed the one who created us to be good. And I believe that's what makes grace even more amazing. But I want you to understand that we are going to have bad days. Four things about bad days. First of all, they're temporary. Aren't we thankful that they're temporary, that they're just one day? Maybe they're a series of days, but a season passes and we move forward. Now go back to that really bad day. I want you to go back to that day or those different days that you were thinking about. And I want for you just to exist for a moment in that day. Sorry to bring it back up again. I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. But I'm trying to get you to remember how bad you felt, how devastated you were, how disappointed you were, how disillusioned you were. You felt like you couldn't climb out. You saw no hope. You saw no solution. You knew that there was nothing that you could do to change the circumstance, and you wondered how you were ever going to get out of that situation. Someone has said there are no hopeless situations, only people who have lost hope about them. And sometimes we have a bad performance day. I was thinking back just to this last weekend, and I know we've talked a lot about Lads to Leaders, and we won't beat that to death. We're going to move on to the next thing. But our kids had prepared, and they had studied, and they had practiced, and they had practiced probably in front of the mirror in their private times and in front of the coaches to do different things. And then they got up there in front of those people that were watching, in front of those judges, and some of them had a good day and some of them didn't have a good day. It's just like every single time you walk into the classroom to take a test. Not everybody gets 100% unless they give you all the answers, and even then somehow we do that wrong sometimes. But there were some of the kids I know that felt like, well, I didn't have a very good day. Maybe you had a bad day in spiritual performance. Maybe you had a bad day in attitude. Maybe you had a bad day because you were lazy and unproductive and you wasted it, and you look back and you say, that wasn't very good. I want you to understand that God allows for rainy days. And because that is the case, we need to allow for them also, whether we're having a bad day or someone else having a bad day. And so forgiveness is a very powerful and important thing for those days in which we do not perform well. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5, the New American Standard Bible, in talking about love, says this, that love does not act unbecomingly, it does not seek its own, it is not provoked. Now look at this. Does not take into account a wrong suffered. I think that means that love doesn't keep score. That it doesn't say, okay, you had a bad day, and I am going to take that moment in which you were weak, in which you were sinful, in which you were unkind, and I'm going to define you by that moment or that day. Love doesn't do that. Love behaves in such a way that it accepts us with all of our faults and our wrongs and gives us second chances. And that's the type of love that God extends to us, and that's the type of love that we need to extend to ourselves and to others. And remember that you're going to have an opportunity to make good on a bad performance day. Bad days are temporary in that sometimes we're just going to have bad things happen to us. Look back into our text, Job chapter 2, starting in verse 7, and I want you to look at how Job responds to everything that's been going on. Now, we look at the first part and what he said about the loss of all of his livestock and all of his possessions and even the loss of all of his children, all of them at once. And then, of course, in chapter 2 and verse 7, Satan hasn't left Job alone, but now he's going to attack him physically. It says, Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. I know a lot of you have been dealing with congestion because of all the pollen. And perhaps you've been dealing with the flu. The flu's really gone around a lot this year, and strep. Seems like everyone's had that, or someone in their family's had it. Maybe you've been sick in the bed with a bad back or a bad neck, or I remember, when I think about these boils, I remember having the chicken pox. Now, I don't really remember it very well because I was in kindergarten, but I remember I had a really bad case, and I actually have some scars from the chicken pox. But I'm asking you to get into that moment for a minute just so you can try to understand how Job is feeling. You remember when you get sick and you've been sick for 2 or 3 days and you've been running a fever for 2 or 3 days and you begin to ask yourself, I forget what it's like to feel good. I wonder what that's going to be like again, but I'm looking forward to that. And I'm thinking Job here is covered from the top of himself to the bottom with these boils that none of us have had. And I'm thinking also that Satan has an opportunity to do whatever he wants to Job to make him curse God, so he gives him these. And I don't think I could possibly imagine what it would be like to have boils like Job had. And it says in verse 9 that his wife said to him, "Do you still hold to your integrity? Curse God and die." You could see that she was done. She was done with God. She was hurt at what had happened. She lost her children. She lost her livelihood. And she doesn't understand why Job is dealing with this the way that he is and keeping his integrity and continuing to believe in God. And look what Job says in verse 10. He says, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" And in this, Job did not sin with his lips. So here's the deal. Job says, "I was kind of waiting for this to happen. Maybe not this specifically, but I recognize that because I'm living here on the earth, every day isn't going to be wonderful." And think about when you're in that bad day, sometimes our attitude begins to question everything and shift away from being positive to being negative about everything. And I've heard people over the years say, "I don't understand why God is allowing this to happen to me." And I'll tell you that I've at least thought it if I haven't said it myself, because we're very human. But the point is that some things are just going to happen, and they're not always going to be wonderful. Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 11, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all." Jesus himself said in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 45 that God makes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. And then again in the book of Job chapter 14, there in verse 1 and 2, "Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue." So I'm just here to tell you that bad days are going to happen, but remember that they're temporary. Another thing about bad days is that they're necessary. How do we know a good day is a good day unless we've experienced a bad day? You know, it's kind of that glass half empty or glass half full proposition. And one of the best things that we can do in our bad days is not think that other people haven't had to deal with what we're dealing with. What does it say about Satan there in chapter 1? God says, "Where have you been?" He says, "I'm going back and forth on the earth." Now to that we turn to 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9, where it says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him steadfast in the faith," stop, "knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world." You know, one thing that you're going to find out when you go through bad times is that somebody else has experienced that too. You never really thought about it before because it never happened to you. And maybe you heard it. Maybe you heard an announcement about it. Maybe you read it in the paper. And then one day you become that person that you think you're never going to be. And one of the best things that brings to your life is awareness. Awareness that other people are struggling. And that you can use that awareness and you can have compassion for other people. And you can reach out to people and help them in their time of difficulty. And in that way, they are necessary. See a bad day as an opportunity to test the depth of your faith. James says, "Count it all joy, my brethren, when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect worth, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Now I want you to pay attention to some of the words that Job uses throughout his conversation with his friends and with God about his predicament. Job 13 and verse 15. Though he slay me, yet I will trust him. Job 23 and verse 10. He knows the way that I take, and when he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. Job 19 verse 25. For I know that my Redeemer lives and will at last stand upon the earth. See, Job understood that even though he was going through all of these difficulties, that there was a God in heaven, and that God was eventually going to deliver him from that moment. Bad days are necessary so that we can learn a deeper faith in God. Two more things about bad days. You can trace them. You can trace them. You can find out where they're coming from. Even Job questioned God about what was going on, and he didn't know. But we have the entire story, and we can see that this was a work of Satan. Turn to Job chapter 3. I want you to see something about Job that maybe you have not investigated before. Because Job, we look at Job and we say, I can't have faith like Job. Job is the standard for patience and faith and trust and godliness. And I want to be more like Job. But you're going to find out that Job was very human. And Job gives me hope. Because Job in chapter 3, he is struggling. And he curses the very day he was born. Chapter 3 of Job. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth and spoke and said, may the day perish on which I was born, and the night in which it was said, a male child is conceived. May that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor the light shine upon it. May darkness and the shadow of death claim it. May a cloud settle on it. May the blackness of the day terrify it. Read the rest of that chapter. And he basically says, why was I ever born? Why did I not perish when I came out of the womb? Verse 11. Why did the knees receive me and the breast that I should nurse? It would have been better off if I had just died. If I had just not had to ever experience misery, he said. Why be born so that I could be miserable? Job is very human in chapter 3. And it makes me think that if such a faithful person who did depend on God and who trusted God, could in his own humanity question his experience and why all these things were happening to him, then maybe I'm not such a bad person when sometimes my faith is not what it needs to be. But the reality is when we are experiencing very difficult problems, we are so encapsulated by that problem that we can't really see anything else. And until we can get away from that for a little while, there is no daylight. And I believe that that's where Job is in this particular moment. And what's amazing about the book of Job is you can see him kind of slowly walk out of the pit. We know from this story that God is not the person or the being who causes suffering. Now, he allows for it. But the question is why? I believe it is so we would depend on him more. And I want you to look at the end of the book of Job with me. Because in Job 38, God begins to talk. 37 chapters of theories from man about what's going on in the life of Job. And then in chapter 38, God begins to speak. And look what God says. It says that the Lord answered God out of the whirlwind and said, the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you will answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with its doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? Read the rest of these chapters. And God will start asking Job questions about creation. He'll ask him questions about the animals. And then he'll demand an answer to those questions. At the end of it all, look to chapter 42. After God is done speaking, asking questions that Job cannot answer, reminding Job that he is God and Job is not, and helping him to understand that God is far above the clouds and he is working something better in all of this that Job is experiencing. Look what Job says. Verse 2, I know that you can do everything and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. And you ask, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. And we see his repentance in the next few verses. But this is basically what Job comes to. He realizes that God is so high and so holy and so righteous and so perfect, and that his plan is so transcending that Job should have never opened his mouth. And I believe one of the things about God, and this was actually brought up by a young man in one of his speeches that I heard this week, one of the things about believing in God, when people in the world question our belief in God, and they say, well, God is not even something that you can understand. That's the whole point. Because if we could understand him, if we could know his ways and his thoughts, that they weren't higher than ours, if his will wasn't better than ours, and if he wasn't perfect, as we're imperfect, then we wouldn't have need to worship him or long for him for understanding or look to a place that is beyond what we know. But because God is all of these things, because he is far above the clouds, we have reason to believe, and we have hope for tomorrow, that all of these things that we're dealing with will one day pass away and will be with the one who knows everything, who can do everything, and who loves us the most. Remember that all evil and suffering in the world is because of the work of Satan and because of our giving in to him at times. So put the blame in the proper place and put the curse on the devil, not your life, not your situation, and certainly not on God. Finally, about bad days, you can get over them. You can overcome them. I've seen many people have many a bad day and move on past it. The sun will rise tomorrow. There'll be another race, another test, another performance, another opportunity, another chance, another hope. Look at the end of Job's life in Job chapter 42. Starting in verse 12, it says, now the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than the beginning. And he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Verse 15, in all the land were found no women so beautiful as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brothers. And after this, Job lived 140 years and saw his children and grandchildren for 4 generations. So Job died old and full of days. God blessed the latter days of Job more than he did the beginning. Now, I want you to notice that God did not take away the bad days, and he did not erase them from Job's memory. But what Job was able to see was God working in his life in order to defeat those days. And I believe because of that, the victories became even more sweet. We need to remember that Jesus said to his disciples in John 16 and verse 33, these things have I spoken to you, that you may have peace in me. In the world you are going to have tribulation or trouble, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Well, there was once a really, really bad day. It was not a coincidence. It was planned, but this was not planned by Satan. It was authored by God himself even before time began, where the child who was born to save the world was executed in gross fashion by the very people he came to redeem. And the scene was such that when it ended, the sky was dark and the earth quaked and the rocks split. And the mob that had been assembled beat their breasts for what they had seen and for what they had done, and they returned home in shame. And even though the book of Revelation says that there are no tears in heaven, I wonder that on the day that Jesus died, if at least for one day there wasn't an exception to the rule. It was Friday, and ironically, right about April, a really, really bad day. It was Friday. Jesus is praying. The apostles are sleeping. Judas is betraying. Pilate's washing. Council conspiring. The crowd is vilifying. But Sunday was coming. It was Friday. The disciples were running. Mary was weeping. Peter was denying. The Romans were beating Jesus. They put him in a scarlet robe. They crown him with thorns. But Sunday was coming. It was Friday. Jesus is cross-carrying, his blood dripping, his body stumbling, his spirit burdened. But it's only Friday. Sunday was coming. It was Friday and the world was winning. People are sinning. Evil was grinning. And as the soldiers nail my Savior's hands and feet to the cross on a Friday, and they raise him up next to criminals, the innocent Son of God being executed like a criminal. And yet Sunday was coming. It was Friday. And the disciples were questioning, and the Pharisees were celebrating, and Satan was laughing. The forsaken was crying, left alone and dying. It was vinegar and hyssop they were applying. But Sunday was coming. On Friday, the earth trembled and the sky went dark, and the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords yielded up his spirit, and hope was lost, and death had won, and sin had conquered. It was Friday. Jesus' corpse they carried, his body they buried. And at the tomb, the soldiers tarried. But Sunday came. And even though it was a bad day, it led to the best day. And that's what gave us hope. So I'm here to tell you tonight that you may have had a bad day. And there may be some more bad days. But you have to believe that God is working in it. Because even in the worst day that the world has ever seen, it was through that difficult moment that God saved his people. And he will save you. And I want you to know also that if the bad day that you're having is completely and totally your fault, if it is your sin, if it is your denial of God, if it is your willfulness to his word, if it is your selfishness that has isolated you from him and from others, and you feel alone, and you feel like no one is ever going to forgive you, simply look at Calvary and understand that that's the entire reason why Jesus came to the earth, was to seek and save those who are lost, and that's all of us. And so we can give God the credit for everything that lies ahead for us, the people of God. There is a great day coming that is going to wipe away all of the other days. And I wonder if that's going to be a very bad day for you or a good one. Perhaps there's someone here tonight who needs to obey the gospel. Perhaps someone here tonight needs prayers. Let's make it a good day. If you need to answer the invitation, won't you come as together we stand and sing.